If you'd like to get in touch with the Naked Scientists, you can tweet at Naked Scientists or find us on Facebook. Plus, this show and all of our others can be found at thenakedscientist.com. This week, you're with me, Georgia Mills, and I'm exploring all things auditory. I'm finding out how hearing works and revealing the amazing job our ears and brain do when decoding the sounds around us. But some ears are better than others. For example, bats can use sounds to pinpoint creatures with incredible accuracy, snatching moths out of the sky by bouncing squeaks back off them. This is called echolocation. But bats aren't the only one who can use echoes to get information. We can do it too, to some extent. Here's an example. It sounds like, from the echoes of my voice, I'm standing in a big room. Or now it sounds like I'm standing in a big cavern. Well, really, I'm just sitting in a studio mucking around with sound effects. You can try it at home with a simple test. Bring a book or a plate in front of your mouth while you talk, and you will hear the sound start to change. But some of us are so good at interpreting echoes, it can be used to effectively see the world around us.
So I'm Jay Steele-Ashar. I'm an orientation and mobility instructor with World Access for the Blind, and I specialize with perceptual mobility techniques, teaching blind people to see through sound and using their cane. I went blind when I was 12 years old, and I had a tiny bit of vision left, but not really any to be functional. I knew about echolocation and other kinds of perceptual techniques from actually a Discovery Channel special that had been aired in the United States. And so I just kind of grew up with it in the back of my mind. And then when I went blind, it seemed kind of obvious. I remembered the tongue click, and I remembered a couple of main features of it. And I thought, well, I no longer have my eyes, but I do have my ears, and both should offer me distance perception. So I started clicking around and experimenting and teaching myself what different distances and textures and things sounded like. Then when I was 14, about a year and a half later, I went to a conference of this person named Daniel Kish. I started working with Daniel, he started teaching me, and eventually I became one of his instructors.
Could you describe what it's like to me?
It's like freedom. So when I click, I make a really small tongue click, so I might say, and what happens is the sound goes out in a cone shape, it tries to wrap around objects, and it tries to go through objects, and then it flashes back to me. And so as I turn my head and I make that noise, I make it every, you know, few seconds at most, usually not that often. It gives me all these different pictures of the physical structures around me. I might describe it as the world made of mannequins or silhouettes. And I can see all of the physical structures, everything from fences and hedges all the way to buildings, cars, trees, lampposts. And they all have very specific dimensionality, texture, density. It is really the world made up of sound. So effectively, I'm a low vision person moving through the world, even though I'm totally blind. I've been totally blind for about 5 years now. And I see with my brain, I see everything that's around me, even though I'm not receiving the information visually.
Oh, wow. So there is a sort of an image appearing in your head. And when did this first happen? And did it go straight from sort of nothing to this vision? Or did you sort of think this sound means this and it gradually changed over time?
That's a very astute question. It did gradually change over time. When I first started, I got sound, but not images. And it took a while for it to become true three-dimensional actual images. Actually, I remember the first time I ever got a true image. It was when I was on a college campus and I was walking past a building and I clicked and I saw the building. I didn't hear it. I saw it. My brain filled in light because I grew up with light. And so my brain filled in a visual image kind of in my head, but I very clearly heard all the angles. And the way in which that came about for me in particular, although it's a little bit different for everyone, was a long period of building what I call a sound catalog, where you do exactly what you described. You kind of discern what sounds go to what distances, what hardnesses, densities, of course, and you build this catalog of sounds where you can assign the sound to a variable, and you build your pictures that way. But that turns into an image catalog. Through the process of neuroplasticity, the brain actually begins processing these sounds through the visual cortex of the brain, and your integrated visual system creates that visual image, even though it's being processed originally through the ears.
And so what was that like the first time you saw this building?
Mind-blowing. Even though I grew up with it and I knew what it was supposed to be one day, I knew what was going to happen. I'd seen the research. And then it happened, and it was, I have no words. I mean, it was seeing as a blind person.
So how does this work? How do our ears enable us to effectively see? That's exactly what Lord Taller, with Jay's help, is trying to find out.
So what we found is that when we investigate what's happening in the brains of people who have used echolocation for a while and who are blind, we found that when they listen to these faint echo sounds, the parts of the brain that typically process input through the eyes, so light, is very active. So it does seem to pick up on these echoes. At the same time, the part of the brain that processes sound, so the hearing part, is active as well. So what we've done then in a second step is we contrasted. So basically, okay, let's say a person listens to these sorts of echolocation sounds and, you know, we're measuring what's happening in the brain. And then let's compare that with what's happening in the brain when they listen to sounds that do not contain these echoes. So it's sort of still the same sound, but it's just the echoes that are missing. And so when we took the difference in brain activity between these two conditions, the part that really came out as still being very responsive to the echoes was this visual part of the brain. And to us, that was really surprising. It sort of suggests, well, are they actually, you know, seeing with sound? Like, what's happening? And so in research which we've done since then, we're sort of trying to tease apart what it is that's actually going on in these sorts of neural structures and what's the sort of information that they respond to.
Right. So is there some sort of rewiring of the brain going on here then?
Yeah. So people who are blind, their brains are organized in a different way as compared to brains of people who are sighted. And that's just the brain being plastic and adapting to, you know, whatever it really has to deal with day to day. I mean, even the brains of sighted people reorganize if you learn a new language, if you learn a new skill, like, say, playing tennis or something like this, juggling, your brain will reorganize itself. And so this change in the activity of the brain that we've observed in these echolocators, that's very consistent with this, you know, knowing that the brain is a plastic organ that reorganizes itself.
So what's next? What are you looking into at the moment? What do you want to find out?
So one thing we're very keen on investigating is how this learning actually takes place and how it changes the brain. So at this point, most of our work, we have sort of taken different groups of people. So for example, we've worked with people who are sighted and then they newly learn to echolocate, or we have worked with people who are blind and newly learn to echolocate, and then we have worked with people who are blind and who are these echolocation experts. And we find these differences in terms of brain activity, in terms of their behavior and so on. And so one thing we are curious is, well, okay, let's say you have a person and they learn to echolocate, and let's say you follow them over a period of time, how does their brain change? So will this learning then actually lead to these changes which we have observed in the brains of expert echolocators?
So while we wait to understand more about how our brains can do this, more and more people are taking up the skill. It can be taught quickly, according to Jay, and is completely life-changing.
The word I always come back to is freedom when people ask me that question. I mean, what is it to be able to see with your brain? What is it to be able to learn a new area very quickly and efficiently with great accuracy, even from distance, and to be able to recreate the world without your eyeballs? It's freedom. It means that I can go anywhere I want and do anything I want. And many blind people can say that, but I can do it very quickly and very efficiently with a great deal of autonomy.
But while this may sound, to me at least, like a superpower, Jay was keen to emphasize this is a skill anyone can learn.
It's not special people out there who are just doing this in very small numbers. There are greater and greater numbers of people who are proving that regardless of your background, it seems very learnable and very teachable as long as you have a structured way in which to do it. I just want people to know that it's something that they can attain.
That's Jay Steele-Lasham, and before him, Lord Taller.